This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast with me, Amit Barua, your host for this episode. Pre-dawn airstrikes by Pakistan on Afghan territory targeting Tehreek-e-Taliban or TTP militants on the 19th of March mark a new low in relations between Kabul and Islamabad. Pakistan claims that it retaliated against TTP strongholds in Afghanistan following a terror strike in North Waziristan on the 16th of March, in which 7 Pakistani security personnel were killed. The Taliban claim that 8 women and children were killed in the Pakistani air raids. A spokesman for the group warned of dire consequences even as Taliban border forces attacked Pakistani positions. What do these events spell for Pakistan-Taliban relations? Has the wheel come full circle for Rawalpindi, which was responsible for the creation of the Taliban and was vociferous in welcoming the return of the group to Kabul in 2021? What can we expect in the weeks and months ahead? To answer some of these questions, I have with me Ramnathan Kumar, former Special Secretary in the Research and Analysis Wing, who is an expert on Afghanistan and Pakistan. Welcome to the In Focus podcast, Mr. Kumar.
Many thanks, Mr. Barua. It's a great pleasure to be back on the Hindu's In Focus broadcast.
Mr. Kumar, tell me, what do you make of these Pakistani air raids on Taliban-controlled territory? And what implications do they have for bilateral relations between Pakistan and the Taliban?
I think you used an excellent expression in your introductory remarks, the wheel coming full circle. And that is exactly what seems to be happening as far as Pakistan-Afghanistan relations and Pakistan's relations with the Afghan Taliban are concerned, Mr. Barua. I think ever since the Afghan Taliban came back to power in Afghanistan in August of 2021, after the American forces withdrew from there, these attacks on by the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan have intensified. They've gathered momentum, and Pakistan now finds itself caught between a rock and a hard place. All the euphoria in General Headquarters Rawalpindi, and more specifically perhaps in APARA, the headquarters of the Inter-Services Intelligence, which was visible when the Afghan Taliban staged a rather spectacular comeback in August 2021, as I said, all that has long since evaporated. And now we are seeing a long drumbeat of attacks by the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan in the tribal areas of Pakistan.
So what is your sense? I mean, the retaliation from the Taliban, the exchange of, harsh words between the two sides. What does it spell for relations between Taliban and Pakistan?
I would say that at least for the future, in the near term future, these skirmishes and tit-for-tat responses are going to continue, which means that the relationship between Pakistan and Afghanistan is going to remain tense and uneasy. There is a question whether these skirmishes and cross-border incursions and raids and tit-for-tat responses, whether these will snowball into something much larger. That, of course, remains to be seen. That may or may not happen. But at least this much can be said for the foreseeable future, that there will be tension between the Afghan Taliban and Pakistan. The Afghan Taliban are going to will continue to show that they are, nobody's puppets. They have a sort of a mind of their own, and they will continue to, I think, harbor the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, because their ideological links go back a long way. And Pakistan will be hard put to grapple with this situation. If you recall, they have tried both tacks during the tenure of the Imran Khan government when it was in power. They tried the softer approach of dialogue with the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, and that paradoxically emboldened the TTP, and they staged a resurgence in the tribal areas of Pakistan. And then, of course, after the Imran Khan government was ousted and you had a new dispensation both in Islamabad and in the ISI, the Pakistan army resorted to, from the carrot, they switched to the stick, particularly after the new army chief took over. But even the stick has had limited effect. The attacks, which marked a strong upswing, the attacks by the TTP, which marked a strong uptick in 2023. In fact, 2023, by many accounts in the Pakistani media, was perhaps the worst year as far as terrorism in Pakistan is concerned in the past more than half a decade. So if 2023 was a bad year, 2024, from the Pakistani perspective, continues to be a bad year. In fact, it shows no signs of improvement. So both the carrot and the stick have been tried, and neither of them has really led to a diminution in the attacks against Pakistan.
Well, Mr. Kumar, as you rightly point out, that you know, Pakistan has suffered heavily. And in fact, in a recent article in Dawn, Zahid Hussain, the Pakistani political commentator, gives a figure of 300 Pakistani security personnel alone being killed in terror strikes in 2 years. So that's a pretty big number. But I want to ask you, you know, what is this Hafiz Gul Bahadur group that the Pakistanis claim they have attacked, you know, close to their border?
Well, that's a very pertinent question, and I dare say the answer would be a long and complicated one, as indeed all things are in the murky world of intelligence and extremism and jihad and so on and so forth. But I will try and keep it as short as possible. You know, all this really goes back to the 9/11 attacks of September 11, 2001, and you know, Al-Qaeda's attacks on the United States of America, the US then giving an ultimatum to Pakistan, and Pakistan under General Musharraf joining the global war on terrorism and taking the attack to Al-Qaeda. That is when, you know, and overthrowing the Afghan Taliban, which was in power at that point of time in Kabul, was overthrown. And the Pakistani army, in its bid to help the United States of America, used the, you know, the tribal areas of Pakistan to go after Al-Qaeda in the tribal areas bordering Afghanistan and Pakistan. And that then led to a blowback and to the formation of the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, which, you know, took up arms against the Pakistani state for turning on its erstwhile protégés. That is really when the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan was formed, and its leader was Behetullah Mehsood, from the Mehsood tribe of North Waziristan. And as you are aware, there are many tribal groups there, the Wazirs, the Mehsoods, and so on and so forth. So I suspect that I'm also now getting sucked into this long story. So let me say that between the Mehsoods and the Wazirs, and various other tribes in that area, there are long blood feuds and so on and so forth. At that point of time, Hafiz Gul Bahadur, who you referred to, he is an Uthman Zai Wazir from North Waziristan, belonging to the Wazir tribe. And he was among those who joined the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan initially, opposing joining the Afghan Taliban, expressing solidarity with the Afghan Taliban, and taking up arms against the Pakistani state as well as the Americans. But Hafiz Gul Bahadur then fell out with Baitullah Mehsood, and the ISI began to use him as a strategic asset, because the ISI's objective at that point of time was, as it still remains, to break up the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan. They were desperate at that point of time, and as they are now indeed. And at that point of time, it seems that Hafiz Gul Bahadur had become an asset of the Pakistan military and the ISI in a bid to counter Baitullah Mehsood, the original founder of the TTP. But then much water has flown down the Jhelum and the Indus and so on and so forth over these 2 decades or so. And now, paradoxically now, with the departure of Baitullah Mehsood from the scene and the Afghan Taliban going out of power and then coming back to power with the help of the ISI in 2021, the landscape seems to have changed completely. And leaders like Hafiz Gul Bahadur, who were at one time considered to be assets of the ISI, have now become their sworn enemies. So Hafiz Gul Bahadur, a Uthman Zai Wazir, as I said, appears to have joined forces with Noor Wali Mehsood, the current leader of the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, although the Hafiz Gul Bahadur group still maintains its distinctive identity. And that is the sort of unique point about the TTP. It's not a monolith. It is a conglomerate of various factions. So you have the Hafiz Gul Bahadur group working in tandem with the TTP, and by all accounts, given full support by the Afghan Taliban, notwithstanding their pro forma denials that they are not allowing the TTP to regroup in Afghanistan. But that is exactly what seems to be happening. And they are attacking the Pakistani state and the Pakistani security forces in a spectacular fashion. As you said, as Zahid Hussain has written, they have suffered more than 300 casualties in the past couple of years, which is a substantial number.
Mr. Kumar, the Pakistani Foreign Ministry statement that was issued, which interestingly confirmed the airstrikes, it also pointed to, the problems they have with certain elements among those in power in Afghanistan. Are they trying to, kind of making a distinction between people whom they still continue to support and people who may have turned against them? What do you make of the statement?
Yes, that is right. I think this statement reflects the factionalism and the divergences, the personality clashes, etc., which are very much an intrinsic factor of the Afghan Taliban as well. For instance, there is Mullah Yaqub, the defense minister, who is the son of Mullah Omar. So Mullah Yaqub has been quite strident in his criticism of Pakistan. He is, in fact, in a recent statement also, talked about the artificial nature of the Durand line and so on and so forth. Whereas, others like Mullah Haibatullah, the present Amir of the Afghan Taliban, who resides in Kandahar, he is considered to be more amenable to Pakistani or ISI control. There are others such as Sirajuddin Haqqani. In fact, Hafiz Gul Bahadur is considered to be closest to Sirajuddin Haqqani. So there are a host of personality clashes and other differences within the Afghan Taliban as well. Some factions are more amenable to Pakistani slash Pakistan army slash ISI control. There are other factions, other leaders who are, more independent, not amenable to, control by their handlers. So I think these are really the realities of the extremely murky situation that the Pakistani Foreign Office statement, in a sense, acknowledges.
Mr. Kumar, as a country which really built up the Taliban, and we got first evidence of this from Ahmad Rashid's book, which pointed in the late 1990s to the fact that a portion of the Pakistani Foreign Ministry's budget had been allocated to the Taliban. From then on to now, it's been a long journey. The Taliban were out of favor, out of power, and then they returned to power in 2021 August, as you pointed out. So what does this mean for, the Pakistani intelligence agencies? At the end of the day, an organization, an entity that they created and they supported and let people cross over to fight in Afghanistan is now basically coming back to bite them.
Very much so. I couldn't have put it better. These are, the perils of outsourcing, your sovereignty to non-state actors, as the Pakistanis have called them in the past. These proxies or non-state actors, they cannot be controlled for any length of time. And eventually, there always comes a time. History is replete with these examples where the tail starts wagging the dog. We've seen it in many cases. You're seeing it in the case of the Afghan Taliban now. We've seen it, the world has seen it, perhaps even in the case of the Houthis in the Middle East recently. They seem to have, developed an agenda of their own, which perhaps even their Iranian masters are not fully in control of. So wherever intelligence agencies, and more importantly, the state has, subcontracted its policies to these proxies in pursuit of plausible deniability and achieving strategic goals through covert means, in the end, these schemes always come a cropper. They then come back to haunt their creators. And this is what I think Pakistan is really experiencing in a dramatic fashion now. And it's difficult really to say how to control this, except perhaps make a completely clean break with the policies of the past. And there I am not sure whether we have still seen any conclusive evidence that would suggest that has happened as far as Pakistan is concerned.
Mr. Kumar, last time when the international community sort of took its eye off Afghanistan, we had the training of terrorists, which finally ended up in, the 9/11 conspiracy and the attacks that you pointed out. Do you feel that there is a danger today from the Taliban being in control of Afghanistan, that they would again be people, who might allow groups which have a larger agenda to operate in their territory or use their territory for attacks in other countries?
Well, yes, I think that danger is always there. And I dare say that, notwithstanding more pressing and perhaps larger geopolitical concerns, other countries, including the West, the United States of America in particular, I think are not really taking their eyes off the ball. I think assets are still being mustered to have, as the Americans call it, an over-the-horizon capacity to, take whatever action is required to prevent the regrouping of such forces in Afghanistan. But if you ask me, I would say that as important as the situation in Afghanistan is under the Afghan Taliban, I think all this is also greatly influenced by the ground situation in Pakistan. I'm sure you would agree when I say that. And you made a reference to Zahid Hussain's article in The Dawn a couple of days ago. You know, when I talk of the ground situation in Pakistan, I am reminded of an equally significant article which also appeared in The Dawn a few days ago. And this was by a very perceptive Pakistani researcher named Ziaur Rahman. And he wrote a very significant article titled "The Decline of Islamist Politics with a Question Mark." That was the title which The Dawn published 3 or 4 days ago. And that article refers to the, you know, the situation arising from the deeply flawed elections of February 8 in Pakistan. This article actually refers to the ostensible, you know, defeat of the Islamist parties in these elections. You know, they came a cropper. They hardly won any seats, bar, I think, the JUIF of Maulana Fazlur Rahman, an old friend of the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistan Army, but now not on the same wavelength. His party picked up a couple of seats, but otherwise the Islamist parties didn't do well at all. The Jamaat-e-Islami, the JUIF, and the Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, the Barelvi group, the TLP, they together polled about 12% or so of the popular vote. I think that's the overall tally, which is better than the long-term average of about 5%. And in that, you know, despite the fact that these parties hardly won any seats, Ziaur Rahman points out that the TLP's share of the popular vote was just over 10%. And the total votes polled by these Islamist groups was about 12% of the popular vote. And in that context, Ziaur Rahman has written, and I quote this, "While the electorate's rejection of Islamist parties weakens their push for stricter Islamic laws, it risks creating a breeding ground for resentment among their supporters. If these frustrations remain unaddressed and mainstream political discourse fails to offer a compelling narrative, extremist groups such as Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan and ISKP, the Islamic State Khorasan Province, may find fertile ground to exploit. These trends," Ziaur Rahman goes on to say, "are further exemplified by the TTP's recent statement calling on defeated Islamist parties to unite for an Afghan Taliban-inspired order, showcasing the political dangers of a political vacuum," unquote. A very significant observation. And if, you know, the wider dysfunctions in the Pakistani political body politic persist, joblessness among the youth continues to persist, the economic malaise persists, then I think the breeding grounds will be created and the conditions will be fertile for groups like the TTP to exploit, as Ziaur Rahman has written.
Right. Before I let you go, Mr. Kumar, I just want to quickly ask you, what is your sense of India's engagement with the Taliban? We recently had an official of the External Affairs Ministry go there. What is your sense? I mean, does realpolitik demand that India engage with the Taliban? Or does it mean, given their track record of human rights and especially the denial of rights to women and education, should India have a hands-off approach? What do you think?
Well, I think to put it briefly, I think realpolitik does demand that we engage with the de facto authorities in Afghanistan to the extent practical and possible. All countries look out for their own interests, and we have to do the same. I think our core interest in Afghanistan lies in, other than the asset, the greatest asset that we have, which is the goodwill of the people of Afghanistan. The other sort of most important pressing concern that we have is to ensure that Afghan territory is not used by this host, by this welter of extremist groups which operate in that area. They should not be allowed to use Afghan territory to conduct terrorist attacks on Indian territory. So therefore, and that core objective can only be served if, by a policy of engagement with those who are at the helm of affairs at any given point of time in Afghanistan. This doesn't mean that, we endorse or support in any manner the anti-diluvian policies of the Afghan Taliban or any other group. But we have to be practical, and we have to engage with the de facto rulers in Kabul.
Mr. Kumar, thank you as usual for talking to the Hindus in Focus podcast. You shine an important light on what's going on there. And I look forward to speaking to you again on these burning issues. Thank you very much, Mr. Kumar.
Many thanks.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.